My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Zach Meisel joining us moments ago where, I don't know, did he break some news? With us, Jason Lloyd, who is in for Ken Carman today, also from The Athletic, talking about Rocchio collecting some of his fragrances and putting them in a cardboard box and mentioning that he might be on his way elsewhere. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard him slip that in there about Rocchio could be going to Columbus and said he was packing up his things last night. Certainly that's unusual. That's typically a tell. Somebody's on the move. Something's happening when guys are packing up their locker. We'll wait and see today.
So again, I don't think anybody's panicking about the struggles recently, but you heard Zach there, and you know there are going to be a lot of questions. Where is this team looking? Because they certainly use some help. Now, I also wonder if, because the timing of this, does it turn into a good thing in a way? Is it a good thing, Jason Lloyd? We're always looking for some optimism on this show. Is it a good thing that they're struggling at the plate right now? Does it force the hand? Does it force the Guardians to be more aggressive?
You mean at the deadline?
Yeah.
I think they're going to anyway. They know. Again, if you look at the metrics from last year to this year on like launch angle and exit velo, like that's going to tell you, it's just math of how far ball should be traveling. And in terms of the offense, like the numbers aren't drastically different than what they were last year. It was almost like, how is this happening?
Wait, what happened to the stadium and the jet stream?
Well, the one
and
thing.
I thought we had the advantage and people were TikToking about this. The vortex.
The one thing. And by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this on here. I was actually talking to somebody early in the year about, like long before this became a topic, I asked somebody who would know over there, was this studied? And I was told, yes, that they did model studies and that removing those shipping containers would have no impact on ball flight.
Then explain the vortex.
Yeah, you didn't explain anything about the vortex.
I'm not going to. But the one thing that did change, and this is a little bit dated, this is probably from about 10 days ago, was pull percentage. And basically, they're just pulling everything down the line, which is what the Rays do. The Rays teach that. The Rays teach, just pull it down the line. And they've turned like very middling players like Isak Paredes into slugging home run threats. Just yank everything. Just jerk it down the line. And the Guardians went from the second lowest in pull percentage last year to the second highest this year. And again, those numbers are a little dated because I haven't updated them from about 10 days ago. And that was the only number that's drastically different than what they were last year in barrel percentage, exit velo, launch angle, all that stuff. So they know that they need to upgrade this. The problem is, which one? Like, which guy do you give up on? Which guy do you include in the deal? Which guy do you ride with? Because how do you separate them right now? How do you separate? I mean, Angel Martinez has looked great to this point. It's a very small sample size. There is a, you know, in April, I thought Tyler Freeman was a long-term solution here somewhere. So how do you know which wagon to hitch to and which one to cut loose? And it's been paralysis by analysis with this organization for years of knowing which one of these guys to move on from, because they very much, it's sort of a fabric of the organization. We can't get this wrong. We can't trade Nolan Jones and have him turn into a star on another team. Now, Nolan's obviously taking a step back this year. But like the even a guy like Gio Urshela, who they gave up on and has turned into a productive major league career, they feel like they cannot invest all of this time, money, resources, years into developing these guys only for them to go on and have success elsewhere. They have to get this right. And they have been unable for years now to decipher what's real and what's not, which guys should they hang on to and which guys should they move on from. And that's how you wind up in this position.
If the Rocchio thing is true, what does it mean? What is the next domino to fall if he was collecting his possessions and heading to AAA?
I think they're just trying to get him straightened out in Columbus. Although it is telling to me that it's a week before the trade deadline. Like, that's a glaring spot to me where you go outside the organization to upgrade a shortstop. Like, that's an easy one. And again, you know you have Bezzana coming. Probably by June next year, I would say he's the everyday second baseman here. That slides Andrés Giménez to short, which makes that contract a little bit more manageable if he never becomes the player that you thought he was going to be on the offensive side. So you're really looking for a one-year gap at short. And that's it. I mean, dare I say, Ahmed Rosario is probably available with the Rays. You want to go get him again? Better than what you've gotten so far. So whether it's something sexy and flashy like Bo Bichette or something much more on a smaller scale, and I know Bichette's hurt right now, there are options to solidify shortstop in the very short term until Bazan is ready and Giménez slides over.
All right, we had we do have news. We have Chris Fedor coming on at 9:20. Talk about the latest with the Cavs. Is there even a latest? Chris will tell you there is. He'll have that explanation coming up in a few minutes. Also, updating you on a poll and then some NFL news that came down moments ago from the Washington Post about the schedule. But I do want to update this poll. I asked the question, what's closer to the real thing? Deshaun Watson's second half versus Baltimore. You might have heard about that half of football before. Or Evan Mobley's series versus Boston, where he had incredible numbers, almost 22-10, shooting an incredible 63% from the field. Right now, 1,000 votes cast, 56% say Evan Mobley's series versus Boston is closer to the real thing than Deshaun Watson's second half. Earlier in the show, we talked about the offense and the changes at offense. We played some audio from Deshaun Watson about merging the Stefanski offense with the Dorsey. He called it college offense. Jason, is that something scintillating for you as the Browns report to camp this week?
I just don't understand where he's getting college offense from. How is that a college offense? Ken Dorsey hasn't been in college since Miami, really. A one-year stopover.
Is he talking about from the shotgun, more spread concepts?
But that's NFL.
It is more NFL. I mean, Patrick Mahomes does a lot of that now the Kansas City Chiefs.
So college tells me that he thinks he's going back to Clemson. This is just going to be Clemson of just go out there and ball. Just go ball. Do whatever you want to do.
So what are the strengths and the weaknesses of that? Because when you say that, I immediately think, hey, that worked for him in Clemson. That worked for him with the Houston Texans. Maybe they didn't win a ton of games. Certainly, they only won one playoff game.
But his numbers look good.
But his numbers were extraordinary. And you saw some of the freakish plays. And you saw not only the great arm, but you saw him being able to dance around, get outside the pocket, make guys look really bad, and make huge plays down the field. So those are some strengths. What would be the weaknesses?
Well, you're exposing him to injury. That's the biggest one. Like, he's not huge in stature. He's already had a ton of injuries. And the Browns have gone from when he first got here trying to protect him. Like, I remember having a conversation with somebody saying, like, we don't want Jalen Hurts. Like, we don't want called runs. We don't want to expose him to unnecessary hits. That's all gone. Like, it's now just, Deshaun, just whatever makes you comfortable. We're going to do whatever makes you comfortable, whatever puts you in position to have success, the most success that you can have. and we're just going to have to take our chances on some of the injury concerns. Am I misreading it?
I do not think you're misreading it at all. I do think they've gotten to the point where the let Russ cook was a big question,
yeah.
You know, as Russell Wilson was aging and they were trying to figure out, can you manage him? What should you do? And then in reality, he had just had diminishing skills. I don't think the athleticism for Deshaun Watson is diminished. I think even banged up last year in the second half of that Baltimore game, you saw glimpses of a guy that still has special
yes.
in his repertoire when it comes to running around. I think they're basically to the point where, all right, he's not a pocket passer. He's not great in that pocket. Maybe he's not even that great at reading defenses. So let's just let him run around and make plays because that's what we know he can do within some structure. I'm not saying it's going to be him in high school, but I do think they want to get the most out of him. How can you get the most out of him? Relying on his God-given athletic ability.
I also think it puts a lot of pressure on the offensive line to hold blocks longer. And they had a very good offensive line. Still could have a very good offensive line. We'll see. But it's a different blocking style when you're not sure where the quarterback is and how long he's going to hold on to the ball. So it puts a lot of pressure on those guys up front.
All right, we have Chris Fedor coming up 9 minutes from now. News breaking about 5 minutes ago from the Washington Post. The NFL and the NFLPA have started high-level discussions about potentially implementing an 18-game regular season. NFLPA Executive Director Lloyd Howell left the door open that an agreement could be reached before the current CBA expires. That, to me, Jason, seems inevitable.
Yeah, we were always headed there.
The question is, and this is just accelerating that idea, that they would do it within the current CBA. We wouldn't have to wait for another CBA. The question is then, how quickly can they get to 18 games? And what, maybe more importantly, would the NFL have to give up? Last time around, to get one more game, it seemed like it was just what? Drug testing? Marijuana?
Yeah.
I mean, I know there were some other things like more money as well. What is it going to be this time around? What do you think the Players Association would say? We are not caving and blowing up this CBA until we get this.
I don't think it matters because I think the football union is the weakest union of all of them, of all the players' unions. Football is the weakest.
Okay, but you have a CBA, and to be able to blow right. that up, they need the players' union
but
consent.
I've heard for years about how players hate Thursday games and how players hate this and they hate that and they're going to take it to the negotiating table and they're going to get this changed and they're going to get this and nothing ever changes. The NFL just keeps adding more and more games. So whatever the league wants, the league's going to get.
Okay, so, yeah, I understand that.
I mean, maybe that they give up, it's even less hitting in practice. It's less days that you're in full
pads.
Are we
done with the preseason?
I don't think we're done. But it's probably, I mean, it's for sure getting cut back, for sure. Maybe two games? Maybe one? Probably two. Probably two. But I think that I think the players would look at maybe cutting back OTAs or cutting back mandatory minicamps in the offseason, stuff like that.
I mean, it already feels like they're not really doing anything anyway. What would you be giving up if you did away with that
That's
stuff?
What I'm saying, is that this is not a strong... I don't think the players' union, I don't think the NFL union is very strong at all compared to baseball and basketball. Like, basketball got... I think basketball signed a bad deal. I think it was a bad deal for basketball. But the one thing that they got is a lot more money in their pocket because they got some things... We don't need to get into it. But they got some things changed to what's considered basketball-related revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to get them more money in the long run, even on top of the exploding salaries and everything else. Football, I don't know. What has football ever drawn a line in the sand and said, we are not budging from this, we want this, and they actually got it? It doesn't exist. NFL owners run and get whatever they want. And they will in this, too.
Well, I wonder, is anybody... I don't know anybody that's clamoring for less football. But how much more football are you going to be okay with getting? As Washington Post story today says, already in talks, blow up the current CBA and get to 18 games. We'll talk about that. Maybe we'll ask Chris Fedor, who will come on and talk some basketball and whatever else with us. Next, here on Sports Radio 92.3 The Fan. We have Chris Fedor from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer to make sense of it all. I was surprised to hear that. I thought it was a no-brainer, especially with three other guys in the draft class that you can make the argument Evan Mobley still has a higher trajectory than all those guys, and they signed max deals. Chris, you heard that audio. What say you?
Yeah, it's surprising to me, too, because I think if you're looking at Evan and what he already has accomplished throughout the course of his career, he's 23 years old. He's been in the running for Defensive Player of the Year. He's one of the premier defensive players in the entire league. He's a game changer at that end of the floor. And you understand that there is an offensive evolution that he could, emphasis on could, make as his career goes on. Those are the kinds of guys that you pay. Those are the kinds of guys that you don't hesitate to pay. So I believe that the Cavs were always going to pay Evan. I believe that they were right to give him this kind of contract. And I believe that if he becomes the kind of offensive player that they believe that he can be, that people around the NBA believe that he can be, we're talking about a potential all-NBA type player. And that's a long way for him to go, obviously, and there's work to be done to get to that point. But 16-9-3 on 55% shooting while being one of the best, most impactful defensive players in the entire NBA, I don't know how you look down on this contract and say that this one is one that they should not have gone out and done.
If Franz Wagner gets a max, Evan Mobley's getting a max, period. That's it. And
yeah, I mean, like, Cade Cunningham hasn't won anything throughout the course of his career. And I like him as a player, and I think there's a bunch of upside there. But the things that Evan has done throughout the course of his career, it's not so much just paying him based on what he's done so far, guys. It's also built into that is what you expect him to become in the future. And if I had to bet on Evan Mobley or Cade Cunningham at this point, I'd bet on Evan all day.
I said earlier, Chris, that fans need to just forget everything that they think about max contracts.
Yeah.
Because where this is headed, where the money is headed, where it's headed even 3-4 years from now, this is going to look insignificant money-wise when guys are making $100 million a year at the end of the decade. Right. How much of that is playing into this? And I just think that we are in a whole new world of NBA with this new CBA that a lot of fans probably haven't grasped yet, especially casual fans don't realize how much things have changed and how valuable rookie guys are, controlling your own guys. And I just think that we're undergoing a massive shift in how contracts are viewed in the league.
I completely agree with that. And you're right. The increase in what the salary cap is going to be in a couple of years from now is going to make this contract look a lot different. It's going to make Darius Garland's, Donovan Mitchell's contract look a lot different. A lot of this comes down to timing. But I think all of this also is under the umbrella of when you have these kinds of players, you lock them up for as long as you possibly can, and you try and build around them. And it's going to be up to this front office to put the other right pieces in place to enhance this roster, to bolster this roster, to make this a better team that is better equipped to compete for championships down the road. But guys like Evan Mobley, you can't just assume that you can go out and eventually replace them in free agency. You can't just assume that you can go out and eventually trade for a player that caliber. Them getting the third overall pick a couple of years and getting Evan Mobley, that was a big turning point for this franchise. There are people inside this organization that have believed since he was drafted third overall that if they're going to hang another banner at some point, he's going to have to be the best player. Like before Darius Garland, before Donovan Mitchell, before Jared Allen, like he's going to have to be the best player for them to win another championship. So you just can't assume that those kinds of guys are going to be able to be found down the road. So when you have them, you lock them up and you turn them into cornerstones and you're trying to develop them the best way that you possibly can. So I'm with you, Jason and Lima. Like this contract itself is not going to be one that I think is going to be prohibitive for the Cavs in any way when it comes to team building. Those are the contracts that you worry about, not these kinds of contracts.
All right, Chris, help me out because much in the same way I'm hearing about Deshaun Watson that, oh, we're going to tailor an offense around him this year. You know, obviously.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Obviously, my skepticism is you've had 2 years. We have smart people on the staff. Same thing with Evan Mobley. I'm now hearing that, you know, this is going to be about his development. They mentioned it at the press conference. To that, I guess I would ask, what have they been doing for 2 years or in the past? I know JB was the coach. I thought he had a pretty good staff. I thought they had guys capable of development, and I thought they had a willing player in Evan Mobley to try to get better. What did you see the last few years with Evan Mobley?
I think he has gotten better in certain areas offensively. He's more comfortable when it comes to initiating offense out of the elbow, out of the post. He has gotten more comfortable when it comes to rebounding and running. And these are all small things. I think a lot of people just want like the big change from 1 year to another, and they want the eureka moment of, hey, he comes back after an off season of work, and now all of a sudden he could shoot from the perimeter. Now all of a sudden he's more comfortable out on the perimeter. Now all of a sudden he's a 35% 3-point shooter, and he's taking higher volume than what he has in the past. Like, I just don't think that's the kind of evolution that we're going to see from this guy. And I also think part of this issue when it comes to Evan is his hierarchy within the offense is going to be a little bit tricky. Right, he's not Cade Cunningham. He's not going to have the ball in his hands constantly. He's not going to get as many shots, as many touches as Cade is going to get in Detroit. Franz Wagner is probably going to have more productivity because of the opportunities that he's going to have. If we're being honest about the way that this offense is going to function, the drivers of this offense, the primary drivers of this offense, are going to remain Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. So that's going to make it more difficult for somebody like Evan to be a 20 to 23 point per game scorer. It's going to make it more difficult for Evan to get, you know, 16 to 18 shots within the offense, a higher usage. He's going to be third in shot attempts. He's going to be third in usage. He's going to be third in touches, just based on the way that this roster is currently constructed and based on the way that this offense is going to continue to function. But I think there is room within that to try and diversify the offense, get him the ball on the move, allow him to face up from time to time, see if you can split him and Jarrett more frequently throughout the course of the game so he's got more room to operate in the spots where he's most comfortable. So I just think Evan is the kind of player that is always going to be or should always be judged based on his impact, not his production, because production is in large part tied to opportunity. And I just don't think there's as much opportunity for him within this offense, with this roster construction, as some other guys around the NBA.
What's going to happen with Isaac Okoro?
This is complicated because, and it was complicated last year, guys, because it's hard to determine what his value is, because you don't want to diminish some of the things that he does well, but you've also got yourself into a position where you have to quantify that and you have to put a financial number with that. And if he's going to be somebody who consistently loses playing time once you get into a playoff environment because teams just completely ignore him when he's on the offensive end of the floor. He took 36 three-pointers in the playoffs this year against Orlando and Boston, and one of those was considered contested. Still, despite the fact that he has made improvements as a three-point shooter, despite the fact that he did shoot a better percentage as the season went on, they just don't believe in him. Opponents just do not believe in him, and they believe that he is an offensive liability within this particular scheme. So now you're talking about somebody who you don't believe is all that playable in a playoff environment. His minutes have gotten cut every time they've gotten to the playoffs. So what's the value of that? What's the true financial value of that kind of player? Guys that get paid in today's NBA are shooters. They're spacers. They're offensive threats. A couple of years ago, Doug McDermott got $14 million a year. Can't play. Can't play. He always gets bumped out of the rotation. But you pay him because of his shooting prowess, because of the threat that he brings to your offense, because of the gravity that he could potentially create.
And in the past, Luke Kennard, I know he's looking for a gig right now, but that's another one.
Yeah. I mean, those kinds of guys tend to get paid, not guys like Isaac Okoro. So part of this is I don't know that there's a team out there that has a bunch of financial resources that are willing to give Isaac Okoro something more than the mid-level exception that would make the Cavs uncomfortable to match. I think there are two of the most likely outcomes here. I think sign and trade, if the Cavs can pull that off with, I don't know, a team like the Brooklyn Nets for Cam Johnson, for Dorian Finney-Smith, maybe there's a deal with the San Antonio Spurs. There's somebody in that front office that likes Isaac Okoro that recommended him to the Cavs a couple of years ago. Maybe there's a sign and trade deal out there with the Orlando Magic. I think the Cavs would certainly consider that so that they don't have to be the one that commits to Isaac. And I think the other possibility is him signing the qualifying offer, playing this year on the qualifying offer, and hitting unrestricted free agency next offseason.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's
because I just think other teams around the NBA are looking at his flaws and saying those are problematic if we're trying to compete for a playoff spot.
For him, if I'm him, I might sign the qualifying offer and then try again next year when you have no. And it's unusual because usually, like, okay, so Colin Sexton, it dragged all the way to September, and then they found mm-hmm. the Donovan deal, and Utah gives him what he's looking for.
Yeah,
Lauri Markkanen with Chicago, it dragged all the way to end of August, early September. So usually when you hit this point, like, I think it more times than not, it lands in a sign and trade. But right. With the new CBA rules, I just wonder if he's better off just signing the qualifying. It's not ideal. Sign the qualifying offer,
mm-hmm.
come back and ball out, and then take your chances next year.
Because here's the other reality for Isaac, guys. There are two teams right now in the NBA that have projectable cap space. One of them is Utah. The other one is Detroit. Obviously, Detroit makes some sense because J.B. Bickerstaff and a couple of Cavs coaches are there. And they need somebody like him to play some defense, bring some tenacity, bring some toughness. But, like, if you're investing in this player, if you're trying to gather an offer sheet that the Cavs would be hesitant to match, you're taking on the good and the bad of Isaac. And I just don't know that Isaac is the kind of guy, if you're one of the cap space teams, Is Isaac the kind of guy that you're willing to give up some of your cap space for? Is Isaac the kind of guy that you're going to prioritize? He just doesn't seem like that kind of guy to me that you're willing to use that cap space on. So I'm with you. I think there is a high probability of Isaac signing the qualifying offer, being back with the Cavs, and seeing if he can cash in next offseason when more teams are going to have cap space and the limitations of restricted free agency are not going to be there. The other variable here is that Isaac fired his agent that he had coming into the NBA. He switched agents going into this year because the way that the negotiations went last year between the Cavs and Isaac, I wouldn't say that they were problematic, but they were complicated because it's hard to put a value on who he is and what he brings at this stage.
And ultimately, he didn't get a deal. So the agent goes.
He did not get a deal, right.
Chris, we got 15 seconds. Jalen Tyson steal the draft for Kobe Altman?
Are we already doing that?
Pretty good those last three games.
He was. And the thing that you can say about him is it feels like, and look, you don't want to look at Summer League and all of a sudden make these sweeping declarations and these conclusions, but it feels like the kind of game that he has and the experience that he has in college, he feels like more of an NBA-ready type that they drafted at 20th overall as opposed to somebody who you stick in the G League for his rookie year. You develop them behind the scenes. I would not be surprised. I don't think it's going to happen when it comes to opening night, coming straight out of training camp, guys, but I would not be surprised if by midseason, by the end of the season, Jalen Tyson was getting rotational minutes for this team because he can play 2 and 3, because he can do some things offensively that are beneficial to you when it comes to a playmaking standpoint, when it comes from a scoring standpoint. And I think that the kind of kid that he is, and the kind of toughness and readiness that he brings, it will eventually be difficult to keep him out of the every night rotation, even if that doesn't mean that he's going to get, 25 to 30 minutes or something along those lines. So he handled himself well at Summer League, and he did himself a lot of good based on those performances and how he kind of managed that team and all those kinds of things that the Cavs look for.
Chris Fedor, what an absolute delight. It is every single time I get to catch up with you in this very time slot. Thank you, Chris.
I love coming on with you guys. It's been great.
Amazing performance. Thank you.
I had a tasty steak with Chris at the Luxor.
That was wonderful.
Oh,
I'm still talking about that meal.
Yeah, it was good. Good
congratulations on all your success.
Might have to have Chris come on again later this week to talk about it some more. I can't get enough of Chris Fedor from 6 to 10. Thank you, Chris.
You got to guess anytime.
All right, there he is, appearing on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And his final series of the year against the Boston Celtics. More on that in a second. But first, Mitch, please.
All right, guys, pardon my take. Well, PMT talking with new Browns consultant Mike Vrabel that was posted yesterday. And there was a conversation where the guys got into what Vrabel's duties might be as a consultant for this year. He got into his experience as a tight end in the NFL for a little bit. Obviously not his natural position, but it was kind of an interesting conversation between the three of them. And Vrabel brought up the possibility of the Browns implementing a player on their roster at the tight end position that's usually not at tight end. Here's the clip.
I think there's a lot of leeway there. I think the first thing I want to do is help Kevin wherever I can. I've got a lot of respect for him. I think he's done an unbelievable job.
Yeah.
Is help and support him wherever. If he has questions or he wants to bounce something off of me. And then I thought it was a great idea. He's like, we have a pretty new offensive staff. A lot of guys that have transitioned on to other places. And now we've hired some really good coaches that are new to Cleveland. Why don't you hang out on the offensive side and give a defensive perspective? Tommy Reese, former quarterback at Notre Dame, Alabama coordinator. And he's coaching tight ends. So he's like, why don't you work with Tommy and the tight ends? And so I played a little tight end in my day. It's not a bad.
Yeah. Ooh, maybe Myles Garrett at tight end this year?
I mean,
you can't stop that.
It's July.
You can't stop it.
Mitch, what do you think?
You can't really read it from there. I think it's more so of a joke, just being like,
Do you think that's a joke? Hold on. You heard Mike Vrabel talk about his exploits at tight end. Oh, and you did the number breakdown.
I've got the numbers right here. And Mike Vrabel, in his illustrious NFL career, known mainly as a linebacker, but he did have 10 catches for 14 yards in the NFL 10 of those resulted in touchdowns. So every time he got the ball, he caught a touchdown.
All he did was catch touchdowns. Mike
and Chris Carter.
So, hey, Ohio State guys, what are you going to do? So, Jason, obviously some tongue-in-cheek on that podcast.
Yeah.
But could you see some creativity? Somebody like Myles Garrett, who is being disrespected financially, right? I mean, Evan Mobley's making more money than Myles Garrett. He's the best defensive player in the game and one of the in the PFF top 100 players and ESPN when they do theirs. Myles Garrett is like universally over the last year become the second best player right. in the NFL.
Behind Mahomes.
Now, yeah. I think it's silly because I'd have to put Josh Allen. We'd have to talk quarterbacks before we get to Myles Garrett. But obviously, I'm in the minority. People think, I think if you were starting your team tomorrow, you'd pick Josh Allen over Myles Garrett. But we're pretty happy to have Myles Garrett. He's pretty unbelievable. He's a bargain financially compared to just how dominant he is. The fact that he didn't even get a sack. What do you get? One sack the last 9 weeks of the year last year or whatever? The fact that that guy still won Defensive Player of the Year pretty easily shows you exactly what they think about him.
Yeah, so you think he's playing tight end? He's not playing tight end.
Why not? Good enough for Belichick and Vrabel, not good enough for Stefanski and Myles Garrett.
I mean, he's athletic enough to do it for sure. I just don't think they want to take the chance. Not that it's much. It's not huge injury risk if you're lining up at the goal line, but it is a lot of. It's a lot of meat in a compacted area. A lot of bodies down there.
Yeah.
Don't take the chance.
Yeah, if they just roll him out to the flat though and high point it, he'll be fine. Well, I've seen him jump. He jumps out of the gym.
Yeah, he does. Well, he won a game for us against the Colts, jumping over to block a kick. Which I wondered if they were going to make that illegal.
It technically is if you touch the guy.
Yeah, if there's
anybody.
Any contact.
How can you make it illegal for a guy to jump?
I just didn't think they wanted guys jumping over other guys.
Most guys can't jump over guys like that. I don't know how you make that illegal. He didn't do anything wrong. He just jumped.
Hearing Mike Vrabel talk during that podcast, because I heard a little more of it, I mean, the guy sounds like an NFL coach, as well he should, right? I mean, he's been a pretty good NFL coach. Injuries kind of did him in there, and then organizational issues. That guy is incredible in terms of a resource to bring in. And I got to give credit to Kevin Stefanski. I know I said it at the time, but what did a lot of cynical Browns fans say when he was brought in? When they first heard Vrabel
was coming?
He's
the replacement.
He's going to be the replacement.
Yeah.
That's not happening. I mean, Kevin Stefanski's going nowhere. I got to give Stefanski credit for having the security. I mean, that is not an insecure guy to bring in Mike Vrabel. It just isn't.
And I have said for years, everyone thinks he's got this big ego. Kevin does not have this giant ego. Everybody's got a little bit of ego. Kevin does not have a giant ego. And this is proof. You think a guy with a giant ego would do this?
I mean, I am blown away. Vrabel is talking about all the loopholes. He is responsible as a player and as a coach for two different rules in the NFL going away because of him and the loopholes. I mean, incredible how he knew how to game the system.
Yeah.
You look at Mike Vrabel, what do you think? You don't think, like, if you just looked at him and how intimidating he is.
Meathead guy that just runs into things, yeah.
Meanwhile, behind the scenes, this guy is coming up ways to, exploit.
That playoff game that he just outsmarted Belichick will go down in history.
He's going to look great on Ohio State sideline in 2025.
Yard Barker just came out. With coaches on the hot seat, I sent this to Nick Wilson. I didn't hear him say it on the show. Number one coach on the hot seat going into 2024, it is?
Ryan Day.
Ryan Day.
Wow, Yard Barker's at it
Yard
again.
Yard Barker as a crusade against Ryan Day. Zach Meisel, thank you for showing up. Chris Fedor as well, Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. For Big Country, for Mitchapalooza, great job with Mitch, please. And for Jason Lloyd, formerly of the Akron Beacon Journal, formerly of a lot of other places. And now, I guess he's at The Athletic. I'm still waiting to see his story from the weekend
Las Vegas. Just be patient.
Baskin and Phelps coming up next. You have been locked in to Sports Radio 92.3 The Fan. So long.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.